Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Strip Search, the comic strip podcast. I am Pete Chianca. I am here, as always, with Dave London. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Pete.
You may hear some interesting noises in the background. That's because we are in the heart of beautiful Harvard Square, Cambridge, outside on, I don't know if I'd call it a beautiful spring day, but it's there's a scent of spring in the air.
A warm winter day.
Yes, a warm end of winter day. And we are here not just to take in the sights, although they are, as always, scintillating. We are here, actually, to visit one of the oldest comic book stores around, I think the oldest on the East Coast, and we're going to talk to the organizers of the Boston Kids Comics Fest, where we will be a special guest again this year doing our podcast live from there at the end of April. So we'll be sitting down with the organizers in the comic book store in a couple of minutes, and you'll get to hear that as you hear the traffic roll by. This is just like one of those NPR reports, you know, they have where the person writing on the chalkboard and you hear the car backing up. You know, we're classy that way.
We are. Strip Search on Location. It's going to be our sub-podcast.
Exactly. So we will get to that soon, but we actually have a few other things to let you know about before we get going, the most exciting of which is, can I get a drum roll? Yeah. Very good. Pet Peeves the Book, based on our comic strip, Dave and my comic strip Pet Peeves, which we've been doing for, it actually had its third anniversary in February.
Wow.
3 years of churning these babies out.
We got through the terrible twos.
We did. And we have collected them into a book, as we've mentioned a few times, and we are actually in the midst of a Kickstarter, which is going extremely well, thanks to our very generous family and friends, for the most part, and a few complete strangers who are interested in our work. We've met our goal and then some, but are still collecting. You could go to petpeevescomic.com to see a link to that if you would like to still become one of our initial backers. And after that, we are going to be publishing the book. It should be available this April. You just finished the cover, isn't that right, Dave?
I did, in fact. Yesterday, we finished the cover, so that's
important for
that,
a book.
That is important, right.
You can't judge the book.
Right. Cannot judge
by
it.
That.
And also all the pages would really just sort of fall
yes,
all over the place.
Yes. It's some might say it's the most important part of the book. So that was sort of our last big step short of actually publishing the darn thing, which is what we're going to do next. So you'll have an opportunity to buy those at Amazon.com or at events where we show up live and in person, like the Boston Kids Comics Fest. In addition to recording our podcast there, we will have books for you to peruse and buy with our signatures, if you so choose. So that's an exciting development. And it's actually, you know, not that it wasn't exciting to do them one at a time, but seeing them all in one place is pretty cool.
It is.
You know.
Although from the art perspective, it's scary to see how, you know, you look at some of the early drawings and I just feel like, oh my gosh, I hope it looks better now.
I mean, that is one thing I've always enjoyed about looking at particularly the early collections of strips that I like but came into later in the run, to see how they've developed. And they all have. Even the best of them, their looks evolve over the years.
And something we've incorporated in our book, which I've always liked from other compilations, is a commentary below the strips that explain a little bit about the strips and our ideas and etc.
Right, so you sort of get into our brains.
Right.
It's a scary place.
The cobwebs.
They have, yes, and it was particularly right. It's particularly interesting from your perspective because of how you approach drawing. I mean, thanks for someone like me who cannot draw, to hear about how, you know, you approached furniture and how you approached the appliances and how you had to keep track of what all the guest stars looked like in case they came back later.
I kind of wish I knew about that before I started drawing.
Well, we learned a lot. A better filing system would have been better.
Right.
So I could actually find old strips. And we thought, remember that one where they went to the mall? You know, you'd have to look through 400 of them to find it. But we're getting there. It's a learning process, and you'll have a chance to learn along with us when you purchase Pet Peeves the book at one of these events or from Amazon. So visit petpeevescomic.com or follow us on Facebook at Pet Peeves to get the latest updates on that. One other project we're involved with that we wanted to let you know about is the latest issue of Comic Strip Cartoonist Magazine, issue number 10. It's a retrospective where they're sort of revisiting some of the cartoonists they've interviewed over the first 10 issues, including us.
First nine.
First nine issues, right, and then they're compiling them into the 10th.
We are honored to be a guest in the compilation.
Absolutely. And it's really, you know, some people who we've got to know a little bit that they've talked to. I know they had Pat Sandy of Next Door Neighbors was in there. Charles Brubaker, who does Ask a Cat, was one of their people they interviewed. We followed this stuff, and they introduced us to a lot of strips that, you know, and cartoonists that we really enjoy. So you definitely should check that out. Another place that you can find by going to petpeevescomic.com, because we have links to all of these things, and check that out and find out how you could get your hands on a copy, electronic or otherwise. They still do a print edition, which I like. You know, not everybody does that anymore.
Paper.
Yeah, paper. I remember paper. Oh, it was so nice. And anything else we need to cover before we get into our very exciting on location?
No, I think we're good.
All right, so stay tuned. We will be back in just a moment with the organizers of the Boston Kids Comic Fest. Stay tuned. Everybody, we are back with Strip Search, the comic strip podcast. I am Pete Gianca. I am here with Dave London, as always. And we are here with some very special guests to talk to us about the Boston Kids Comic Fest, which is coming in April to Pine Manor College. We are here in the Million Year Picnic, which, I correct me if I'm wrong, the oldest comic shop on the East Coast? Or in the Northeast, maybe?
I believe so. I mean, we found one other store in Oregon.
That is
older than we are. But all the other shops that were older have closed down. You know, mostly shops in the Bay Area.
Right. Uh-huh. And that was Tony Davis talking, who was the co-founder and creator liaison for the Boston Kids Comic Fest, and the owner here. So it's great to be here. And we are also here with Lizza Haley. And you are the social media maven for the Comics Fest, and a school librarian in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also here with our old friend Jonathan Todd, who is another co-founder of the fest and one of the masterminds behind it. So thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you. And I also like to start to say, Lizza does a lot more than just the social media. She's integral. That's why I had to have her on, or the other main operations person, Mina Jane, who's in Europe right now. But yeah, Lizza really, kind of just so much of the program.
I would really say that Mina and Lizza are the heart and soul of the Boston
Mina.
Kids.
Amen. Amen.
Dave and I were at the fest last year, and we did our recorded podcast there, and we definitely got that impression. And the thing about Mina was she was so calm. Like, it's like there's all this chaos going on. He's completely unfazed.
Yeah.
Unflappable. Where they need to be. So we will definitely catch up with her when we.
Librarians are made of pretty tough stuff.
Oh, you can say that again. Absolutely. So for the people who don't know, who may have missed it last year, shame on them. But they somehow it escaped their radar. You know, what is it, and why is this different? How is this different from some of the other comics festivals you see around?
Okay. Yeah. It's a free comics festival, and what's different is we're really focused on sharing with the public comics, graphic novels, and hybrid books. And hybrid books are things like Diary of a Wimpy Kid that are kid friendly. You know, a lot of comic cons they have a lot of kind of graphic, either violent content or sometimes profanity and things. So we just wanted like a kind of a place where it's just really safe and fun for kids and families. Mm-hmm. So there's that. That's the kind of the main goal. But there's also this free cartooning workshop, so kids can try out cartooning. There's a lot this year. And then there also we have panel discussions with creators, librarians, and I'll let Liz talk more about that, those specifics. And anything else, Tony? I mean,
as far as I think it's a a con where, as we grow, especially, we're hoping to blend, you know, the established cartoonists, the sort of bigger names from bigger publishers who do kids' graphic novels, with a lot of smaller local creators, so that people can sample what they have and see new things. And at the same time, as you said, a big part of our mission is trying to inspire kids to create their own art, mm-hmm. to find their own voices. Mm-hmm. And that's what the workshops are about. But also, we have one table set reserved for kids who want to come and sell their own
exactly.
their own comics.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really the thing, you know, to make it something that sort of passes on the love of comics from one generation to the next.
Mm-hmm. Reading and creating.
Reading and creating. So, and there's been an explosion over the last decade, you know, really starting with Bone and Raina Telgemeier's graphic novels. Just an explosion of graphic novels aimed specifically at younger readers or an all-ages market. And some of the finest books coming out, I think, in comics today are being created in that market. Things that are open, honest, and not just, you know, autobiographical comics, but comics with adventure, comics with science fiction, a little bit of horror. There's a lot of good stuff coming out. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking for is growing the festival so that we can showcase a large chunk of what's really good out there.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it must just be exposing people to it. That they, I mean, we actually, before we went on the air, Dave was talking about his reading comics in his father's pharmacy when he was growing up. And sometimes, right? Isn't that
my dad would take me to work and I would just sit there because they would have the shelf of all the comics. And so every time the new shipment came in, I'd be like, Dad, I need to go to work with you.
I miss that. I miss the, you know, when comics were in every drugstore, every newsstand. And, you know, you just, I miss that.
Now, for the people who were there last year, what do you have that's new?
Yeah, sure. We have three confirmed really headliners, and they are it's the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl comic artist, Erica Henderson, who's a two-time Eisner Award winner who drew the first 37 Squirrel Girl comics for Marvel and has worked on Jughead. We have Raul III, who is the award-winning illustrator behind the popular graphic novels Low Riders in Space and Low Riders to the Center of the Earth. And he's also worked on the SpongeBob SquarePants comic book.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm.
And then we also have a kind of local hero, Joel Christian Gill, who's the author and illustrator behind graphic novels that share fantastic real-life stories of Black Americans, including this really kid-friendly graphic novel about the stunt motorcyclist Bessie Stringfield. And Tony is our, you know, liaison. Is there things you want to say about those three headliners?
Well, I think they sort of speak to the diversity of what's out there. Work that's fun, informative, culturally broad. And I'm really looking forward to, I think people are going to be really excited to see Erica. And I think it's going to be good to expose Joel and Raul to even larger audiences, because mm-hmm. Their work is really excellent. Mm-hmm. Joel has done 4 graphic novels about African-American history. 2 are called The Talented Tenth, and then 2 are called Strange Fruits. And so he's recently took the Bessie Stringfield book, which I think was volume 2 of Talented Tenth, mm-hmm. and he adapted it into a children's book. So it's the young Bessie Stringfield riding her first bike before she actually becomes a motorcycle enthusiast years down the line. And it's a gorgeous book. It's a gorgeous book, and I'm looking forward to seeing it take Joel's work into new places.
Yeah. Also, really important is that we moved to a larger venue. Last year, it was actually my church was the host, but we moved to Pine Manor College, which is right in Chestnut Hill, right off of Route 9. Where, it's accessible by the Green Line, the Chestnut Hill Green Line stop, and that allowed us to do more workshops, more panels. And Eliza, can you tell us about some of the most interesting workshops and panels?
Yeah, well, sure. We're really excited. Besides, the headliners are going to be on a panel, and we're going to be able to do Q&A with the headliners and talk about their work, which is really cool because they are very different from each other in terms of their style and their work history and stuff. And so it would be really great for everybody to have that chance to talk to them. But we have some superheroes who are going to be on stage ready to talk to kids about their lives as superheroes. So we're going to have She-Hulk, Black Panther, Star-Lord, and Jack Frost from the Guardian Comics. And so we're really excited to have kids come out and talk to some of the coolest superheroes and be able to ask about their lives and get photos with them. And we're really thankful to the Band of Heroes for making it possible for our superheroes to show up.
I just got even more excited about that.
Isn't that so cool?
It's possible. I should mention I'm having like 12-year-old flashbacks just being in this store. my 12-year-old habit here. So now we get to go talk to superheroes.
It's really cool. Yeah. And then we're also, we have a panel with recent graduates from local schools that do art, illustration, and comics, and they're going to talk about sort of what their hopes and dreams are and what it's been like to get to where they are, and have the young audience members be able to ask them, like, if they want to become artists too, and or writers of comics, like, how did you get where you are? What are your suggestions for us? And we have a Dave Lewis, who is this really inspiring artist, writer. His latest book is called Kismet, and it's a Muslim superhero. And he's been actually doing book signings all throughout Boston in the last couple of months. But besides that, he has been involved in this really amazing refugee comic project where they translate books into native language, and then they have them in the Syrian refugee camps, and they're basically putting out comics for kids based on their cultural history.
Wow.
And it's this really inspiring project, so he's going to be talking about his work. So that's really cool for our panels. And then in terms of our workshops, as we mentioned a little bit before, there's going to be a lot about making comics and different things, from focusing on faces to drawing animals to doing like a collaborative comic together. So there's really excited about the hands-on stuff for kids. We're also going to have a room where there's going to be set up with something called Scribblet, which is like digital online making of comics, which I think will be really, it's going to be sort of all day, and you're going to be able to like go in and for an hour at a time and check that out and try out your hand at doing like online comics. But we also have some of the workshops are for adults. So we're going to have something for teachers, comics in the classroom. We're having something for librarians and teachers to talk about everything from how do you incorporate, you know, build up your collection in your library, to things you might want to think about in terms of working with teachers as a librarian. So it's going to be really great. We have a really nice lineup for our workshops.
Something we probably want to just make sure we get to our listeners is where they can find out more information if they want to go online. Can you just give us some places?
Yes, actually. Well, we have a website, bostonkidscomicfest.org. And that's where actually you can sign up if you want to get involved, because we're looking for volunteers. And we have a bunch of different really cool volunteer opportunities, from people to like basically spend the day with our headliners or with other like workshop leaders or whatever, helping them out, to people being greeters, helping with like bus, you know, running around things. So and then our website also just has tons of information, and you know, things are subject to change. Definitely check back the website frequently just to see what's going on,
just to make sure we get it 10 to 5 on Saturday. April 27th, 2019.
Yes.
And actually, yes, mention where Pine Manor College is.
Yes. Pine Manor College is at 400 Heath Street in Chestnut Hill, and it's right off of Route 9 in Chestnut Hill, kind of near the, not too far from the Chestnut Hill Mall. Important, it's accessible by Green Line, the MBTA, Chestnut Hill stop. We have free shuttle service there.
And there is free parking at Pine Manor College.
There's free parking at Pine Manor.
Yeah, if you need to, if you are driving. Yeah. And just in case people are worried that there's not going to be food, we actually have some really wonderful food trucks. Yeah. Bon Mi, Melt Food Truck, and Chicks and Dogs. So we definitely, there'll be food available. There's going to be face painting. There's going to be actually an outdoor space where we can make, everybody can contribute to one panel of a comic, because there's these really cool pavers.
Oh, that's
and so
awesome.
Everybody can like make a collective comic when they're there with their family members. So we're really, really excited about the event and hope that we can get lots of people out.
And then when people get to Pine Manor College, is there a particular building to look for?
Good good question. There's going to be a lot of signage.
Yeah.
Right. Look at the building with Black Panther and
John Frost.
Well, someone on the roof sounding over.
You know, just something that's always interesting to me is sort of ways to get kids to read who maybe don't want to. How effective are graphic novels and comics as sort of in leading kids into other types of reading?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing. And if you think about it, because we live in this multimodal literacy age where kids are constantly bombarded by not only words, but images and sound and video. And so I think what's amazing about a comic or a graphic novel is that you have to read the pictures with the words. You have to understand like what's happening in between the panels and make a lot of inferences. And so it's a really actually... I know a lot of teachers are very concerned it's not real reading, right? And it's really frustrating because it actually is almost even harder because you have to do a lot of work when you're reading a graphic novel or a comic. And we definitely have seen that you get a kid like really excited about reading one graphic novel, it leads to another, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, there's this book, this chapter book that's very similar in the storyline. Like it has adventure, it has silly humor in it, and then there's all these hybrid books like we were talking about, like Wimpy Kid, that are out there now too. So I think that it's amazing what kids have available to them that they didn't have when we were younger. Like even the last from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
And I was very fortunate. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles. My mom was an elementary school teacher, and there was never this differentiation in our household between comics and books, high and low, sort of culture or art. So if it involved reading, my mom was in favor of it. And, you know, I might read the Uncle Scrooge Genghis Khan adventure, the Crown of Genghis Khan, and I might go to the library the next week and check out a book on Genghis Khan. They work hand in hand together. So I've got an 11-year-old now who has read pretty much through that entire wall of children's graphic novels. And now he's a sporty kid, so anything that slows him down, that gets him away from bouncing a ball or playing a video game that involves bouncing a ball. And, you know, one of the people who I work with, Kelly, suggested a couple of different manga series that were about sports, Slam Dunk, forgetting the other couple. But he started reading those, and the next thing I know, he found a bunch of stuff online. He may have read 500 volumes of sports manga in like the last year. He goes through it like that, and he's just immersed in that world. But it changes sort of, you know, the flow of what he's doing. It gets him to slow down a little bit, and it puts him in the mood to read other stuff as well. And, you know, that's what you're kind of looking for, because reading is about building habits around things as well.
I agree. And also, like, for instance, we have one of the workshop leaders and exhibitors is from the science comics, there's a lot of nonfiction comics that have been published in the last bunch of years. And those are getting kids into topics where it's just so accessible because some kids are more visual. And so they're going to be reading with the pictures and the words instead of just like a straight up science book. And I'm so excited about all the nonfiction stuff. There's amazing biographies and memoirs, and then there's history. There's all of this different stuff about social issues. So I think, like, and we have exhibitors who are going to be, like, sharing some of that stuff. So it's going to be great.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, so parents, if you're listening, I think you just got an excellent argument as to why you should bring your kids to the Boston Kids Comic Fest on April 27th. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk to us and for having us in here today. We may have to pick up a few comic books before we leave for old time's sake.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's really exciting.
Thanks for inviting us.
We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Pine Manor College and Solstice, its graduate creative writing program, tabletop game maker Anomia Press, local comic book stores Million Year Picnic and Hub Comics, children's book publisher Candlewick Press, Dark Horse Comics, the family of York and Rebecca Lowe, and the engineering firm Omnix Technologies Corporation.
That was very good. You may have a future reading the sponsors on PBS.
Or on Script Search podcast.
Thank you, guys. Oh, man.
Don't go away, everyone, because we are going to come back and talk about Jonathan's graphic novel, which he is working on and which will be published not too far down the road. So stay tuned for more Strip Search.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello, plus better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dann. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Strip Search, the comic strip podcast. We had a great time learning about the Boston Kids Comics Fest, but before we go, there's another very important topic that we wanted to cover with our special guest, Jonathan Todd. Jonathan, you have a graphic novel that you've been working on for a while now, isn't that right?
A long time. I mean, if I was to be honest, kind of at least 2015 is when I think did the first drafts and thoughts about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now it's finally, because I remember when we had you on the show last year, it was, I think you had just gotten word that, you know, you might be looking at a publishing, you know, situation for that,
yeah.
And that's coming to pass now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the time I knew it was coming, but I hadn't signed the contract yet, and so I wasn't at liberty to discuss it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm very honored that Scholastic's publishing it, and I have an awesome editor, Cassandra, and so yeah, actually I just got feedback from her yesterday that I can start drawing some final pages, so it's very exciting for me.
Sounds like it's such a relatable subject matter.
I could see
why Scholastic would be interested. It seems like right up their alley.
Well, it's kind of inspired by my upbringing right around here. My family, we lived in Boston when I was a kid, but during from second grade on to sixth grade I lived in Miami, Florida. And then I came up around middle school, and so in Florida, for the last 2 years, I was basically the black kid in my grade, and so, but yeah, I didn't feel any different from all the other kids. But then when I came up north, I just felt this real racial segregation, and it just really, I was uncomfortable with it, and so I things like, you know, I didn't know where to sit in the lunchroom, because all the black kids were at one table, and then I thought, well, it just felt weird to me coming into that situation. So it took a while to really a number of years to trying to get this idea of warming up to the black community and so it's about that inner struggle and finding identity that the book's about. But it's based on my life, but it's not a memoir by any means, but Cecil is a lot like who I was. So that's the general theme of the book.
Yeah, no, that sounds terrific. I mean, and it, you know, it's just so interesting because this area is sort of considered so progressive and liberal.
Yeah.
But it also has this very sort of sordid history when it comes to race relations that,
absolutely.
You know, a lot that still needs to be worked out, clearly.
Yeah.
And this, and I think that sometimes the best way to tell these stories is through somebody's personal experience. So I could see this doing very well.
Oh, thank you.
Can you tell us about your process? What materials and techniques are you using?
Okay, so just the art or the writing too? Or?
Just the art. I don't care about the writing.
Yeah, sure. For the graphic novel, what's nice, it's kind of my favorite stage, is the thumbnailing stage, where for people who aren't familiar with comic books, I liken it to the storyboard phase of a movie, where you just have small drawings of what the whole story is going to look like. So I love that phase because, you know, I'm really loose, and you can just lay out how a scene is. You can change it, and so that's kind of the stage I am now. I recently submitted a full thumbnail of the book, and then my editor gave me feedback and said I needed to make the pacing slower. So it it took a while to do the second revision. So now she gave me feedback, and so now I'm ready to go to the final inking, the final stage. But so I'm going to redraw the pages nicely and big, and then ink with a brush number one, Winsor & Newton, Series 7,
nice.
With India ink, and then I do micron pens for the lettering. Yeah.
So as far as when you do the thumbnails, are you penciling that, or what materials are you using just for the thumbnail?
Oh, for the thumbnail, I just do number two pencil, and I usually do it in my sketchbook. Yeah.
So what size paper is the thumbnail?
Oh, yeah, thumbnail. So I do the thumbnail on just 8.5 by 11, and then the final drawing on like 10 by 15, kind of traditional comic book size, but it'll be reduced to like a...
Right. And then for the real sort of techno geeks in the audience, what paper are you drawing the final on?
Oh, I like 2-ply Bristol board. I like the smooth surface.
I always like the smooth myself.
You like smooth, yeah. So, yeah. Nice.
And then can you, I don't know if you can talk about this, but when will we be able to see it, the final version, out in print? Can you talk about the end result?
Yeah, well, it's right now scheduled to be published spring 2021, but my deadline is in... next year, 2020, I guess it takes a whole year to for it to printing and distribution, and so I'm new to all this, but it's very exciting for me, just learning the process, working with an editor, like a really talented editor.
It's fantastic.
That's awesome. And the name is Timid.
Yes.
Am I right? We want to make sure people know that, and we will definitely have you back.
Oh, thank you.
If we're still doing this,
I'm sure you will.
We'll have you back when that is ready to print. Well, thank you very much to all of our guests today for talking to us about the Boston Kids Comic Fest and about Timid the graphic novel and everything else we covered here in Cambridge. And thanks to everybody for tuning in to Strip Search, the Comic Strip Podcast. We'll see you next month.
Just gonna run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.